Welcome back, The Lighter Side, Joe Grammatico, Tom Kaliopoulos. On today's show, we're doing an outlook on the Atlantic Division, the top four teams, Boston, Tampa Bay, Toronto, and Florida. Tom, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Joe, I'm doing good. Got my Boston accent going here. Keith Crowder.
The top team in the league. Yeah, bring your Boston accent.
I got my Boston accent. I don't know if I sound like a New Yorker or Boston, but anyway, no, it should be interesting. Let's tackle this, Joe. We got obviously the Boston Bruins and GM Don Sweeney. You know, they are looking pretty good. Their outlook, you know, their AHL team, the Providence Bruins, enjoyed a pretty solid season. What do you got for their cap, Joe?
They got about $17.9 million in available cap space. Obviously, the first overall team league. They got five picks in this upcoming draft. None of those are in the first round. They got three unrestricted and three restricted free agents on their main roster with the big name. Obviously, is Chara going to be back, or is he going to retire? And Torrey Krug, the other two big names on their defense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the, you know, he's still got Zdeno Chara. He's an unrestricted, as you mentioned. Guy still logs 20 minutes a game, Joe. He's a plus 26 this year. He kills penalties. I'm thinking you're looking maybe Boston, maybe trying to bring him back for one more year. Maybe give him a reduction in minutes, much like Detroit did with Chelios and Murphy and guys like that later in their career. You know, I think they can get him possibly in a value deal for 1.5 mil, and it would be a good signing. What's your take on that, Joe?
I mean, I think since he's their captain, if he wants to come back, he does keep in pretty good shape. So they're obviously going to let him do. He's one of those guys, whatever he's feeling like, they're going to let him come back and play. But he does log a lot of minutes, like you said. But I just recall back to a couple of playoff seasons. Like, he just doesn't have the gas anymore, I don't think, come playoff time. And they make deep playoff runs, and he was never the quickest guy with that big 7-foot frame of his that he's lugging around there, but he can be a liability. He gets beat pretty easy, especially if he's the last guy back. His range only makes up for so much. So, and they should definitely, if he does come back, cut his minutes. So this way he still has something left in the tank on these deep playoff runs.
Yeah, you're not going to see 20-plus minute games from him anymore, Joe. But if they can get him in a 1.5 mil contract, you got leadership. Yeah. And that's one of these prospects I'm going to be talking about in a little bit. Yeah, he did have a knack for getting beat. The league's getting speedier. It's not getting slower. He did get beat a couple times. He got caught reaching, and where the length didn't help him. So, it's something to look at, and Boston utilizes them right. I think it would be like having another coach.
Right.
Which could help. Another unrestricted free agent, which is a little more perplexing to me, is Kevin Miller. Okay, he hasn't played in a while, Joe. He suffered multiple kneecap fractures sliding into the boards. It could be a possible career ender. So he's 32 years old. Not sure – with Boston's depth at D, if they're going to re-sign him. Maybe a team struggling at the defensive spot might want to maybe take a look at this guy, and if he makes a recovery, which has happened, you'd have a nice seasoned professional to plug into your lineup at the D-core if you're struggling, like Detroit would be a good team, possibly. But that's a serious injury to overcome. You got Connor Clifton and John Moore that are kind of ready for more significant roles. So I think that kind of puts the writing on the wall for Kevin Miller. And, you know, it's a shame because the guy's fearless. He's a lunch pail type and basically a shutdown defenseman. A very strong guy. So the injury took a lot out of him. Hopefully he recovers and, you know, some team will give him a look.
Yeah, they're in – Boston's in that – one of those spots like the Red Wings were in. They have a much better team than the Red Wings did when they started kind of falling from grace. But they're in that I call it a thin prospect pool because they're not drafting in the top five, top 10. They haven't in a long time. So looking at their prospects, who are you looking at to be the guys that are going to be ready to step up and keep this team significant?
Well, they got a guy that's already been in the lineup, Matt Grelchek. I think I'm pronouncing that right, Zelchek. It's a silent R, but he's like a Tory Krug clone, great skater. He's got offensive skill. I think he's going to get more power play time. He played on the second power play in penalty kill unit. But if Krug leaves, I think he might slide in and assume his role. Mm-hmm. He's like seriously a clone. And I look for the Bruins to maybe sign him for a good $2.5 million, and especially if Krug leaves. You got Anders Bork as well. He's a restricted free agent. Okay. He played at Notre Dame. He had success there. He's 23-year-old, but he's coming off two shoulder injuries. I think you can get him for about $1.5 million to stay a Bruin. And, he just needs it. He needs to assert himself. He's been passed up by a couple players. And, since they acquired Richie and Case, it sent him to the press box. And, I think it's time for him to either put up or be moved, because they're kind of, relying on him and waiting him out to see if he's going to pan out. You got Joachim Nordstrom. He's an unrestricted free agent also, Joe. But once again, they got so many depth players that are younger. I don't think they're going to re-sign Nordstrom. Perfect scenario basically would be for the Bruins, to leave him, maybe offer him $2.5 million. It depends what DeBrusk and Krug do,
Right.
That'll see how much money they have for the cap to get these guys signed. As far as prospects, what you mentioned, you got things are looking up there because the Providence Bruins had a very good year. They have five prospects I could see coming to the NHL next year, 21-year-old. He's got two more years on his entry-level contract is Jack Studnicka. He's a center. This guy, you remember we mentioned Boston having problems with secondary scoring. He was Providence's leading scorer this past year, and he's improved his vision and his overall ice awareness, Joe. I think that's going to give him the edge to plant himself in the starting lineup at a third and fourth line. You also got Dan Vlatar. He's a goalie. He'd be good insurance for Rask, especially in the minors. I believe they signed Halak again, right?
They did. They re-signed him week or so ago.
Okay, so this is going to be an insurance policy for either goalie if there's injuries, because he's going to be the first guy called up.
Right.
He had good numbers, 25 games. He had 1.79 goals against average and a 936 save percentage, which are pretty good numbers down in the AHL. And he does have a little bit of pro experience, which should help him out. Another center that I like is Trent Frederick. He's a left shot. He's a young guy. He's cutting the mold of physical. He's a physical player. He's also got some finesse that he's added in the past years. We're going to see what happens. His future will determine on what they do with Nordstrom testing free agency, which I believe he'll be let go. And if Jake DeBrust is signed again. So it's going to be tough. That'll basically determine what they're going to do with Frederick. But he's locked up for one more year, Joe. So They got to see if he can stick. If not, they might lose him. Another prospect is Brendan Gaunce. He's 6'2", 25-year-old. He came over. He was a 26th overall draft pick in 2012 with Vancouver. So they brought him over. He has 118 games in the NHL, and he'd be used as a depth forward, you know, kind of in the same role as some of their other Harland and all that were used. So that'll be his role. He's a sizable forward, which is what Boston likes. You got Vakanainen. He was the 18th pick in 2018. He's 21 years old, 6'1", 185. He's a Finnish defenseman. He can add depth. We already talked about how deep their D-core is already, Joe, in Boston. So he's got a simple game, but he kills penalties. He's improved his body positioning and with front net battles, and his gap is a lot better. So there's another a bit of defensive insurance for them with Euro Vakanainen. Other than that, Joe, what's their cap space looking? They got a $81.5 million cap. So, you know, we got enough. I don't know. Krug's going to probably demand about 5.25, and he might push up to 6.25 to keep him. Yeah. And then you have DeBrusk. DeBrusk is, 35-goal scorer, you know, potentially a year. And if they can get him for $3 million, they might keep him. Other than that, Joe, I mean, that's going to be the big things for Boston if they can get those two guys signed. And I think their draft, they're going to need some offense. What's your take on that?
Yeah, they're going to pick. They definitely have a good depth on their defensive side. I was going to say, depending where they finish in the playoffs, there's going to be some defensive talent down there. My guy, Barron, who might be available depending on how deep they pick, but they got to go offense, like you said, and there's going to be tons of offense available.
Well, they don't have a first through 30.
Rounder, no. Oh, that's right. They don't have a first rounder.
No, they're not
picking until the end of round two.
Yeah, they got rid of it in a trade with Anaheim, you know, to get the coast and
that's,
you know,
correct.
Traded Backes and Axel Anderson, you know, in that trade. But so I'm looking at,
you're right.
If they're lucky in the second round, if Ozzie Weisblatt is there out of Prince Albert, just skilled handler, you know, he's skilled enough to back players off. If he's in a crowd, I think if he's there, Boston could use a player like that.
Right.
Or a kid named Luke Evangelista. We talked about him, the right winger out of London. Or Tyson Forster, the center right wing, who's got a bit more size, who might fit their mold a little bit in Boston. Out of Barry, he's a 6'1 and almost 6'2 forward, 194 pounds. If those players are there, you grab them. They also can. There's a big forward out of the Sioux Greyhounds, Pitlick, Jaromir Pitlick. He's a 6'2", 192 pound. So might be those are the players that I'm looking for them to scoop up if either one of them are there in the second round. So that's what I have for Boston, Joe.
All right. Next is the Tampa Bay Lightning. And this, if there's a team that this COVID outbreak league shutdown helps come this playoff time, it's Tampa Bay. They're going to get Steven Stamkos back. But looking into next season, they got 8 picks in this upcoming draft. None of those are in the first round. So another team that's been trading their first round picks. They got 5 unrestricted free agents on their main roster. 4 of those are on the defensive side. They have 2 restricted free agents on the defense, and they got another 3 up front. So we could be looking at a completely different defense core for Tampa next year. And they're only going to have about $5.3 million in cap space to work with. So they're not in a very favorable spot on the free agent side or even getting their players re-signed.
It's going to be tough, Joe. I mean, some of your free agents include Sergachev, Mikhail Sergachev. You got Anthony Cirelli, Eric Cernak. His offense went down. He's got a 1 or 2 year deal for $2.5 million. It's not out of the question. They have various AHL prospects that are up for new contracts as restricted free agents. I think Cirelli is going to probably make anywhere from $3.5 million to maybe $5.5 million. So you might have to get rid of, or you can convince Tyler Johnson or Gord, you know, or Palat to waive their no trade clauses and maybe move one of them. Mm-hmm. They're all asking, you know, over $5 million price tag, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, I think Gord, he just, his production slipped. So it lowers his return value.
Right.
And then Johnson's probably the best bet to move out of those guys because there's a surplus of centers in Tampa. You know, Palat would probably have a better return value on all of them, but he's going to be hard to move because they lack left wing depth. So it's a sticky situation in Tampa. I mean, their top prospects, you got Cal Foot.
Mm-hmm.
Who's related to Adam Foote. They're looking for him to assert himself. He's 6'4", 212. He's physical. Could be a perfect fit. He's got great length. You're getting rid of Zach Bogosian and Braden Coburn. So they're likely to depart. So you never know. I think the guy can make a nice outlet pass. He doesn't lose his cool under pressure. Of a heavy forecheck. So I think all those attributes would probably pencil him in next year for Tampa. You also got the second round pick in 2015, Mitchell Stevens. This guy does all the little things, Joe. He's very physical. He's a bottom six forward, which they need to bolster. And I think he can chip in with some offense. And I think with more time, those numbers would increase drastically. Alex Barré-Boulet, okay. He's in Syracuse, their farm team. He was one of their leading scorers with 27 goals and 29 assists in 60 games. He was a Steve Yzerman signee, as a matter of fact, out of the Quebec Major Junior League. He's got great vision, great offensive skills. He plays bigger than his size also, so you might see him, especially if Tyler Johnson moves on and waives his no-trade clause. That might be the way to go as a viable replacement. So you got a guy, Radish, Erie Taylor Radish. He's out of Erie Otters. I think he's ready to go as well, you know. So he's a guy that loves to play in front of the net, torment goalies, score a lot on loose rebounds. I think he's another guy who can mold into a solid checking line player who can add an offense once in a while, enough to make him a viable grind line guy. So what's their cap, Joe? They're around $76 million. They only got like
Over five to work with.
Yes, that's going to be tough. They're going to need players to with no trade clauses to modify their deals. They're going to have to convince one, like I said already, to maybe accept a trade, or they're going to lose a quality player.
Yeah, I've heard rumors that Tyler Johnson might be a guy that they look to move.
Yeah, if not, they're going to lose a guy who doesn't have a no trade clause protection. So that's going to be up to the management there, and you know, that's going to be the big thing to watch for Tampa Bay, Joe. Their draft needs, I mean, I don't know. They pick What do they got, Joe? They got the high. They don't have a first round pick
either.
They're
not picking in the first round. Yeah, they're going to pick depending where they finish this this playoff deal. And yeah, they're going to be second round picking somewhere between 55 and 62, probably.
Yeah, looking at a few players, Joe, here with Sam Colangelo. We talked about him, 6'2", 205 right winger out of Chicago Steel. You got Will Aguile, the 6'2", 201 defenseman, or left winger, I'm sorry, from the Spitfires. Martin Kromiak, 6', 181 left winger out of Kingston. Or that name, Jaromir Pytlick, 6'2". Once again, his name comes up. He can basically do it all and sizable forward. So picking at 59 to start it off and – you know, those might be the guys that they might want to be looking at, Joe.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. What about getting talking about their defensemen? Do you think they're going to bring Kevin Shattenkirk back? Or do you think he's going to get on the move again?
I think he might be on the move, Joe, because he's over a $5 million price tag, isn't he?
No, they got him pretty cheap. He was under $2 million when they got him. Yeah. I don't remember if they traded for him or if they signed him.
I forgot. New York
didn't re-sign him. I don't, he's been on so many teams the last few years.
Yeah, this COVID thing kind of throwing me off. I don't know if they're going to keep him.
Yeah, he wasn't traded. So they signed him a one-year deal. So this might be just a play and see if we keep you kind of thing.
But, you know, the Lightning, Joe, they have a lot of depth in their organization. So they can be patient. So they don't have to make hasty moves. They just got to make sure they make that cap a little bit more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think they'll be okay. But they're gonna stay top of the league, top five teams, because of their core. And they're going to have to address that cap space so they can start adding pieces that are a lot younger. And once the draft picks get a little better, you know, this year they're probably not going to get helped in the draft. So they better start bolstering those prospects even more. And then their GM's goal is to trim that cap space, much like it is with Yzerman in Detroit.
Right. Well,
easier to do when you're a top team, though.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot easier to take, for the fans. I mean, it's tough over here in Detroit because, they're used to success and, you know, they're enduring a lot of losses while Yzerman is trimming up the fat. So
We'll
see what happens over in Tampa Bay. But they're going to be a top five team and they're always going to be a viable cup contender. You know, with their roster, it's just a matter of getting that cap straightened out a little bit.
Right. Number three in the Atlantic Division is a team that's in even worse cap space than Tampa, the Toronto Maple Leafs. But the way that long-term injured reserve works, they actually have about $113 million in salary expenditures this year, which is way over the $81 million upper limit. But with what they allow you to do with long-term injured reserve cap, they're still compliant. But next year, they're only going to have about $4.6 million to work with. They have four unrestricted free agents on their main roster. They got four restricted free agents. And they're going to pick 10 times in this draft. You know, six of them come spread over the final two rounds, six and seven. They don't have a pick in round one, and they don't have a pick in round three. So they're another team. Their first pick will come somewhere in that second half of the second round.
Unless they get that number
unless
one pick.
You're, yes. Unless.
Joe, because I know you're.
Unless, yes.
You do not want to see that happen with them or Pittsburgh especially. I had to bring it up.
Unless they blow it in the qualifying round. You're
yeah.
Right.
But Joe, Their cap is a mess. They've got a lot of it is tied up with Matthews, Marner, Tavares, and Morgan Rielly.
Mm-hmm.
But they would be foolish, and you heard it here. Listen to me, Shanny. Do not move Nylander, Hyman, or Muzzin. You know, there's, you got to keep those guys. Those are your character players. Those are the guys you're going to need if you're ever going to make a playoff run. Now, I look for departures. You're going to see maybe the just recently acquired Tyson Barrie. I don't think he's going to be kept. I think Cody Ceci was a bust. They're both unrestricted free agents. Tyson Barrie carried a $5.5 million price tag. I don't think they keep him. You know, Cody Ceci was a $4.5 million. You know, he's going to be looking for that kind of money. But, you know, I don't think he's going to get 2.5 mil the way he performed. So that's going to be tough. But you can't keep them both. I don't think you're going to get – I don't think many opponents are going to offer them big money because of how they performed.
Mm-hmm.
But Barrie was a disappointment, you know, on the right side of that defense for Toronto. He couldn't match up against a lot of top flight left wingers coming down that side, you know, and he got exposed, you know, and then when their injuries hit an already depleted defensive core, you know, they struggle turning pucks over and stuff, but give Tyson Barrie a little bit of credit. He was the main presence in that defensive core that kind of, you know, kept them stable and at least got them to where they were, you know, bought them time. So they are a viable playoff team. I think Toronto might be willing to move a forward, maybe Andreas or Janssen or Kapanen or maybe Kerfoot, use them as trade bait. Janssen had a bad season, okay, because of injuries. But it'd be more like those moves would be more like basically a shed payroll type move. Okay. But they're going to be tied, Joe. Their cap issues are, you know, Dubas, the general manager over there,
mm-hmm.
He's always drafted well, you know, probably since going back to 2014 late rounds. This team is going to have to rely on that again.
Right, definitely.
Unless they get that number one pick. You know, they got players like Trevor Moore in the past, Mason, Marchand, you know, for example. Their top prospects, Joe, are Rasmus Sandin, 5'11", 208-pound, 19-year-old. You got Timothy Liljegren.
Yes.
Yep. Very good player, 30-point man in 40 games as a defenseman. You got a center left winger, Nicholas Robertson, guy who netted 55 goals in 46 games. You got the center right wing combo of Mikhail Abramov, another guy who netted 35 goals in 63 games. I think they're going to need defense. Based on all the conversations you and I have had about this team, they're very lax below the dots. Their turnovers are ridiculous, and they're going to need defense, Joe. So I think the most complete player in the draft for them, you know, I don't want to say Anton Lundell because he's a center out of Liga, the league over there. He's 6'1", 185 pounds. He's smart. He's they kind of compare him to Patrice Bergeron, Barkov, or maybe a Shane Couturier out of Philadelphia. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good player. If he's available, they might want to forego the defensive needs and take him. If not, I would go Caden Gould. the defenseman out of Prince Albert. I've been bringing his name up, just like you like Barron.
Mm-hmm.
This kid is a real deal. He might be a nice fit for them. You got Braden Schneider out of the WHA, Brandon, the Wheat Kings, 6'2", 202 pounds. He's a punishing body checker. I think he would be a nice fit. So you'd have two type of defensemen, Muzzin and him back there.
Mm-hmm.
Be a nice addition to the defense. But those two picks I would probably go with before Lundell, although Lundell could be a defensive forward presence that they could also use to forsake the defensive concept of, you know, the draft for them being an essential need. That's the only way I would deviate from that. So that's pretty much Toronto for me, Joe. I mean, like I said, their cap is tied up pretty bad with, you know, the four forwards there that we spoke of earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're in. It's a lot of money tied up in four people, and unless you find the right role players, it's going to be tough for them to make long and deep playoff runs. You're going to have guys that are going to want to get paid, and if they have, it's a contract year, and you got a guy, you know, like a Rasmus Sandin whose contract is up. You got some of these other younger forwards, even like a Zach Hyman, who's, you know, approaching 30, is a big year. He's going to get a pay raise somewhere else. Toronto's not going to be able to keep him, and those are the guys that you need. So they're in a rough spot. Hats off to them if they can figure out a way to win with this roster, but they really handcuffed themselves.
Yes, they did.
Team number four, the Florida Panthers. Finally, a team with a first round pick. They're going to have seven picks in this draft. They currently have five unrestricted free agents on their main roster, six restricted, and they're going to have close to $21 million to work with.
Yeah. Joe, this team is well run. Joel Quenneville, to me, is one of the best benchmen in the league. He's got to get Mike Hoffman and Evgeny Dadonov signed. That's just going to be like two more guys that add to the offense. The input drops off dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. Because really, Barkov and Huberto are the only two guys that are netting pucks consistently. Barkov is one of the most complete two-way centers, but he only has two more years on his contract after this season. Huberto is locked in for three more years, but that's right there, 12 mil towards the cap. You know, after that, the core, you know, has some long-term contracts that are risky. And the type that can break a franchise. So they're going to have to be careful. Bob Brovsky, we've talked about him in between the pipes there. He signed for another 6 years ago at 10 mil per season. That was a horrible contract.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yes.
Defensive core has a lot of money invested in it. With Ekblad, you got Yandel, Strahlman, Mike Matheson. Okay, they're signed for the next 5 years, some 3 years, but it's one of the better decors in the league to me. Look for Spencer Knight, the goaltender, to emerge in a starting role. He's lighting it up. We're over there in, where is he, in Boston College? Or he's Boston U or one of those teams?
Yeah, we always get him confused. One of the Boston teams.
Yeah, but he's put up good numbers and you know, but they need offense, and I'm looking for them probably to get a shooter in the draft or a guy, an impact player that really, you know, you notice them. So I'm thinking Noel Gundler, a right-wing, left-wing combo player. Can really shoot it, got a great shot release. would help goal production. Or a guy just that's a dynamic player like Seth Jarvis would fit in really well over there. If they wanted to go defense and you know, add some depth to that already solid core, you got Topi Niemöller. He's a solid two-way Finnish defenseman. He can skate very smooth, outlet the puck, and he's pretty smart, Joe. But for my money, value pick would be Noel Gundler. Seth Jarvis wouldn't be bad either, but
yeah, they're in a spot if they get through this qualifying round and they get bounced in, I guess, the official first round of the playoffs, they fall into that fun part of the draft where they could be looking at Dawson Mercer, Dylan Holloway, Seth Jarvis, Connor Zary, just a whole host of offensive potential right there.
What is that, 10 to 15 slot, Joe?
14 through 20, roughly.
Yeah.
So they're 15 through 20. And I don't think either of their top guys are really playing. I mean, Owen Tippett had a pretty good year for Springfield this year. He put up 40 points in 46 games, but he's supposed to be a sniper. He put up 20 goals in 46 games. I'm thinking that they want to see him increase that output. So I could see them looking for a sniper in this draft, depending where they fall in.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm going to be following their pick because they're a team that interests me in the sense that I they're already established. I like their direction they're going, Joe. I mean, this goaltender, Spencer Knight, is going to pay great dividends for them. I think he's going to be a mainstay and one of the better goalies in the league for years to come. They're going to have a nice defensive core with goaltending, defense. You got a lot of diversity within that defensive core. It's just a matter of getting that offense some pieces around those Barkov and Huberto and all those big forwards who are so skilled. So if they can do that with some skilled players who play in traffic, I wouldn't mind Seth Jarvis over there. I think he'd be a nice addition. But Noel Gundler is a trigger man, and they could really use that as well. So it's going to be interesting to see who's the GM over there.
If it's Dale Talen, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, Dale Talen.
Right. So he's a guy familiar with being a first-round pick in the NHL, and he's always been a big – wasn't he a defenseman with Vancouver? I can't remember if he was a big winger or a defenseman, right? But he's been around the league for a long time, and I think him and Joel Quenneville have a beat on what they're looking to do.
Yeah, he was the second overall pick for Vancouver in 70, his defense.
Well, they're a good program. Florida's looking up. It's one of these things where I really like what they're doing over there. And they're adding size. And ever since Gallant left there, that team has had some nice pieces to work with over there. And, Quenneville's got to be exciting. Excited to work that, and build around that.
Yeah, both of them came from Chicago. What, Talon was there in a management role from 98 to 2010 or so in various roles, and Quenneville was there during that time, so they know each other really well. They're maybe taking that Chicago mold that they put together and instituting it in Florida.
Yeah, I remember Talon used to be the announcer there, too, with Tim Foley or whatever, the guy who's still there, I think. They were always a Homer-type broadcast. When I watched them on the dish, it was between them and Detroit and those old Norris Division playoff games. Yeah, I couldn't handle them. So, Murray Bannerman with a save! And then Dale Talon would always be this Homer guy, kind of like Derek Anderson was with Nesson in the Bruin games, But anyway, Joe, that Florida is going to be interesting in their playoff series too this year. We discussed that recently. So you're going to really see their needs, you know, mm-hmm. play in that series.
Yeah, like we said, they have some money to put some pieces together. They're going to have to spend some of it. Probably give a raise to Hoffman and Dadonov, but they still have quite a bit to work with after that, so they can really shape some pieces into place here and even be a player in free agency if they want.
I always liked Hoffman. I always thought Yzerman should make a pitch for him, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, he was a good late-round pick. He was like a fifth or sixth-round pick by Ottawa, I believe.
I don't know why. I think they were trimming trimming salary or something. I don't know. But, you know, he's a nice fit with Florida. Everybody kind of gets hidden in Florida. It's not Tampa Bay. And, you know, it's a small market considerably. And I don't know. I just think they got some talent over there that's better than most teams to build around. And you got the right benchman. You know, he's going to be requesting players.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, Talon and him can work together and might see some good things from Florida in the playoffs in the next couple of years, Joe.
Yeah, I was going to say that they could even surprise us this year, but who knows what's going to go on. This could be the year they could sneak one out, just the playoff.
They got the Islanders, right?
I believe so. Let's see how far back I got to go in my notes to find it. Should have it up in front. I got the West. Who do I got for the East. Yep, they're playing the Islanders. I took Florida in that series.
Yes, you did. It depends. That's gonna be
the non-playoff series.
Right. It depends on how Florida plays that. I think Quenneville should be smart and make adjustments from how they played during the regular season. You can't trade chances. Islanders are gritty. They play their system well. And like mm-hmm. I said before, and they got forwards that can put the puck in the net on the turnover. So Huberto and, he's going to have to be on his game as well as the other top forwards there. But, you know, hopefully they can get some of their players back this layoff. You know, was good for them in that regard, but I still contend you're going to see what their needs are in the upcoming draft through that series. So,
right.
Pretty much it for Florida, Joe.
Well, there you have it. The top four teams in the Atlantic Division. We'll continue our Atlantic Division outlook with the bottom four teams: Montreal, Buffalo, Ottawa, and our hometown Detroit Red Wings. We might have to do just a whole show on the Red Wings by themselves, depending how depressed you want to get.
Well, Joe, I don't know, man. I'm hoping this summer, or, you know, I don't know when the off season is now. What it's going to be?
Yeah, right. This fall, this winter, Christmas time.
Hopefully, it's waving goodbye to Abdelkader and a few other guys. I'm done. I can't take watching that anymore. And Nielsen and, you know, guys like that. Sayonara, I mean, have fun in Seattle with the Kraken. What do you think about that, Joe, the new nickname for Seattle?
They had a neat logo. I like the logo. I'm always leery.
Why are the colors so basic?
Yeah, I'm always leery on new teams because I always feel like everything's going to be so gimmicky. Nowadays, with I feel like video games and the create a team, you know, the way that they do that, you can pretty much pick all these. It's all cheesy logos, so I always worry when there's a new team popping up. I think it's better than the Golden Knights logo. I wasn't a big fan. I thought that Golden Knights logo really fits that cheesy video game plug-in.
That kind of that logo, that shield, is kind of growing on me, but. The color scheme for the Kraken is a joke. I mean, come on. I mean, you couldn't come up with something better than that. I know you're probably keeping it in tune with the Seattle Mariners or whatever, mm-hmm. and they got a Mariner theme going on there, but I'm thinking they could have did a better job with the name. But I guess the merchandise is one of the largest selling now in pro sports.
Yeah, it's people like it. They could have went. They should have copied the Supersonics logo. I like the Supersonics.
Yeah.
No, yeah. It's all gimmicky now. I feel like bright colors and yeah, I feel like there's not too much left to do. I feel like all the colors and everything's taken.
I don't know. I'm retro, old school look jerseys and stuff. And I mean, when you do the black and teal, it's like I'm thinking Sharks all over again. I'm thinking the Pistons when they switched the colors, the Detroit Pistons. What a bad thing to do. And they obviously got wise and moved back out of that teal mode. And mm-hmm. Man, it's just, come on. It's got a, what's the logo? Is it like an S?
I think it's an S for Seattle, and it's like a one red eye, like a septopod trying to play off like an evil octopus type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically.
But it kind of. Yeah, it kind of looks like a snake, too. It like threw me off a little bit looking at it, figuring out exactly what it was supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can do with that without getting too cartoony
mm-hmm.
as far as a logo. But I'm sure you're going to have some different patches on the shoulders that, I don't know. I just thought maybe they could have came up with a better nickname and, you know, through all that. But we'll see. I mean, it'll be more interesting to see. When's their draft take place? They come into the league when? Not this
year. It'll be next. Yeah, sometime next year. Sometime after the next offseason.
Okay.
Could be this time next year, depending on how the seasons shape out.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see if Yzerman just buys Abdelkader out and a few players like that, or, you know, he leaves a few players because they got a lot to work with that they can leave unprotected. So not to worry about that like we did with Vegas, you know.
Right. Yeah. But other
teams have a lot bigger problem in that regard than we do.
Yeah, for sure. Will they be able to repeat the Golden Knights success?
Not a chance. I don't see that happening again. And I don't think they're going to be able to build a better team then. But that, you know, that goes to show you the proper chemistry can take you far if you play the game right. And
right.
Ron implemented a good system and everything. And really, I look for them to be a tough out in this year's playoffs. They're built for the playoffs.
Right.
You hear me say that a lot, Joe. I try to tell fans that, you know, it's not all about talent all the time and flash and dash. You got to have the right chemistry and you got to have the right makeup for a player to compete in the most important season of the year. It's the playoffs, the 2 months. Wings haven't been built that way since, geez, mid-2000s, really 2009. After that, it was like downhill. And I wasn't excited about their playoff runs because I knew how they were built. Mm-hmm. So I think always run into Los Angeles or a big team like Boston, you knew they were going to go.
Right.
You know, they made that nice run against Chicago, but they didn't finish it when they were up 3-1.
Yeah.
They could have had another cup final in there, and then you never know when you're playing against when were they still in the West then? Yeah, they were still in the mm-hmm. West. So you never know going against the East. I don't remember who was in the cup final when that year. I think Philly. Was that Chicago Philly that year?
Was that the first year?
Kane goal.
The Kane goal, I believe that was against Philadelphia.
Or Boston, maybe. I don't know.
It was on the road. It was Philly. Yeah, it was Philly for sure.
Detroit probably could have matched up well against them and they blew that 3-1 lead. And I go on and on about that. I remember the game, Brendan Smith and some of the mistakes he made in that series when it was 3-1 and even line changes that Erickson and Cronwall made is just stuff that you see in peewees.
Right.
They literally exited the ice. They showed a camera view. Detroit was up in the game 2-1 and there was a delayed penalty or something, and Cronwall, they showed it from behind the net. They dumped the puck down thinking they were going to get a line change. So Erickson and Cronwall literally went across the ice towards the boards and then exited in an L-shaped manner to their bench. They showed it on – it's like you don't do that. So basically you change and take passing lanes away because when the puck was dumped, they thought it was going to go deep. Well, Duncan Keith made a great play gathering the puck, and he turned it right back up ice on a diagonal pass, stretch pass, from his far blue line by his bench all the way to the far blue line on the opposite side of Detroit's bench. It was a diagonal pass. Whereas if those two defensemen would have angled going to their bench,
right,
the far defenseman could have took that passing lane away and forced Keith to maybe
regroup it
right. or to his partner.
Right.
Instead, he was able to stretch past that, and they end up coming in and scoring that tying goal, and then it was downhill from there. Right. Never regained momentum, lost a 3-1 series lead, and that was it. Little plays like that, it drove me crazy. And that was their last sniff at any kind of playoff success, really.
Really, yeah, you're right.
It's been downhill ever since in Detroit, and it's like – and the Cronwall, and these are supposed to be veteran players, you know. They played with players who were probably – some of the best at their craft between the ears in NHL history. So you mean to tell me you can't figure that out? It was just stuff like that that drove me crazy. That's why when people talk about Cronwall, it's like I personally think he was overrated, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. No, there's a lot of people. A lot of people I think would agree with you on that one locally. Yeah.
But I remember that highlight. If I watched that game over again, they would show it the same way, and I could actually freeze frame that and show people what I mean. Right. Mm-hmm. I saw it as a player, a former player, and it's just stuff that drives you crazy because the NHL, the only thing that separates you is pretty much IQ.
Mm-hmm.
Effort and IQ.
Right.
Pretty much everybody's talented in the NHL. It's just those two aspects don't always come to the forefront with players.
Right.
You know. Mm-hmm. It's because it's the NHL. But anyway, I went off on a tangent, Joe, but that's pretty much it with the four teams and, you know, top teams in the Atlantic. Should be for the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, for sure. There's quite a big gap from Florida to Montreal. We've talked about it. Montreal's getting the gift this year with this qualifying round. But, they weren't even making a run to make the playoffs the time the stoppage came around. So they're getting the gift, but yeah, there's a huge gap, a very visible gap from the top four in the Atlantic to the bottom four. It's definitely not tight like the Metro Division, that's for sure.
Hey, Joe, remember I asked you who I forgot who you mentioned that you would like to see get that number one pick. Vancouver. You remember me saying Vancouver?
Yeah, you wanted Vancouver. I went with Montreal because they're the worst of the teams that are in, and okay. I think we should. Something's got to go right, and the worst team wins this lottery of all this. The crap show that was put together here. That was the other thing. So, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard that if this whole thing falls apart, the whole qualifying rounds and playoffs, and there's this big COVID spike and they can't continue and play out, that they'll still do the lottery for that first overall pick, and then they'll just worst record or whatever they're doing. Was it winning percentage from worst to best? So they're not going to just redo the whole thing and just do worst. Since they did the lottery, those seven teams are going to get screwed.
That's going to drive everybody even more crazy.
Yes.
So they should have – you know what? I still contend this. I tell Zach all the time. When that season ended officially from the COVID,
mm-hmm.
I had to come up with all this qualifier playoff and all these other little nuances, how they're going to get it done. Right then and there, they should have just said to all the teams, look, we're officially shutting the season down. Not going to play the rest of the games. They should have just went the old format, worst team, best record, put them in that order.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody would have argued that. But it's not drama. It's not
right.
that what they were. They saw what the NFL did, you know, with this big spectacle. But that's like apples and oranges. You can't compare the two leagues. It's, you know. it's just different. So, you know, but when I originally they had that draft on television, and I'm listening to Patrick Sharp and Keith Jones. Mm-hmm. They got the smiles on their faces, like they're talking. It's like reality TV all over again. I'm looking at these two thinking, this isn't good for the NHL, guys. Why are you making it sound like it is?
Right.
And the second phase is going to be so interesting now. And it's like, come on. We're not a league. Fans want it done right in this league. We're not one of these people that are built around drama and all this other stuff. I don't need any of that. Just do it right.
Right.
The league's been built on all these years. It's been a league that hasn't relied so much on popularity or competing with the other three majors. It doesn't matter. This is a niche sport. The fans are hardcore, so don't cheat them. Right. And then basically with all these gimmicks, I think that's why people get rubbed the wrong way with Bettman.
Yes.
You know, he hasn't done stupid stuff in the longest time. You know, I thought he's done a good job with these outdoor games and all this stuff. It's added some credibility to the NHL, but now this kind of makes him take three more steps back. And it you know, I wonder, you know, where's this guy been in his buffoonery? Well, he's back.
He's back, yes.
He's back. anyway, that's that, Joe.
All right. Let's see top four teams in the Atlantic. Joe and Tom, we'll see you back here next time on the lighter side.